Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
It's not fat guy in a little coat, all right? It's more like fill the sleeves. Those shirts, they're cutting them slimmer than ever. That's what I'm talking about. You been in a department store lately? Go try on a shirt and then talk to me. Our next guest, Ben Bolch, LA Times. He covers the UCLA Bruins, and he joins us now. How are you, Ben?
I'm good.
Tried on a shirt in a department store. It was one of those slim cut things. Ripped it like the Incredible. Yeah. Ripped it like the Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno.
I know what it's like. I have to go with the. I think they call it the modern fit. That's a little more cut through and a little bit thicker.
Yeah, they're making the shirts so thin. You know.
Yeah.
LA Times, UCLA, Chip Kelly, that's kind of a sexy beat right now.
It is, and I don't know if you saw, I just had a big three-part Chip Kelly series that ran, I think the last part ran a couple of days ago, but it's getting a lot of buzz around town and, some nationally on Twitter as you kind of scroll around. I think people are fascinated to see what Chip's going to do, and one of the things that's been a little bit frustrating from a beat writer's perspective is these first week or so of practices, he shut them down other than, 20 minutes of stretching, light drills, and, some individual stuff that's not very revealing. So spring was open and fall's been closed so far, so not really getting a good sense right now of what they're doing.
It's interesting as I look at, he likes to put people out of their comfort zone. Do people at UCLA look like they're out of their comfort zone with him?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because a couple of the reporters were talking about how some of the players seemed a little bit maybe just worn out in the interviews after practice. Guys that were used to walking up to us smiling and joking around looked like, they weren't rude at all, but they looked like, man, they were drained and they were ready to move on to something else, maybe their bed or an ice tub or something. But I'm sure it's an adjustment for guys, and they're already saying that, the pace they went at spring, they've taken it to a whole different level. So everyone's eager to see what they're going to look like September 1st in that opener against Cincinnati.
What's your sense? I mean, is it going to be Oregon-like? Is it going to be something Chip has picked up in the last year? Do you get any glimpse at practice or what they'll look like on offense? Will they play fast? What's your sense?
Well, I think I think it's clear the tempo is going to be fast. I think he's going to try to do that similar to what they do at Oregon. He said from day one that he's going to tailor it to the strengths of these guys. And, looking at their personnel, I mean, their tight ends might be the best, had the most talent of their group on offense. So he's talked about having some sets where two or three tight ends on the field at the same time. I think that would be smart. They really have to get this running game going that was one of the worst in the nation really for the last 2 years. But you've got to imagine that, Chip's going to find a way to utilize some mismatches and some of those zone read option plays he loves so much to get it going again. And, they brought in the California sprint champion, a guy named Kazmir Allen, who at least like build and speed-wise is built a little bit like DeAnthony Thomas.
Yeah.
So you got to have a sense that he's going to find a way to get him involved. So it's just really kind of fascinating to wonder about the possibilities of what we're going to see.
We're talking to Ben Bolch, LA Times. Three-part series on Chip Kelly that you mentioned about. Part one was sort of Chip Kelly's mind in his early coaching days. Like, how did he become Chip Kelly? What did you learn with that phase of the piece?
Yeah, it was fascinating that, he just soaks up knowledge and information any way he can. And it's not just football. He went and learned Navy SEALs training information. He learned best business practices from major corporations. I mean, he's learning about how to be a leader and how to kind of build a team and mold, you know, people toward a sense of camaraderie, which, you know, you don't really hear about a lot from just a typical kind of X's and O's old school football coach. So, you know, one of the phrases that he hates most, and I'm sure you know this, is that, you know, we've always done it this way, because he always wants to find something to give his team an edge and a new way of doing things better than it's ever been done before.
He talked about things like winning a Rose Bowl, winning a national championship at Oregon, and people kind of sat forward in their chairs. Then he went off to the NFL, where he struggled by and large. I mean, he had a season there in Philadelphia where they looked like they might break through. What did he learn, or what happened in the NFL to Chip Kelly, as you can gather it?
You know, it's still, I think, puzzling to everyone, including Chip, because, you know, he had such good early success, and I believe they were 9-3, you know, a good chunk of the way into the second year, and then things just kind of fell apart. I mean, I think it's multi-layered, obviously. You know, I've heard conspiracy theories about how the NFL lets the officials really dictate the pace of play more so than college, where, you know, the officials will literally stand over the ball until they're ready for you to snap it. And then obviously you've got different roster sizes. And then you've got Chip kind of taking over the GM responsibilities and maybe having some misses there. So, you know, I think it's multi-layered. I think, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, everybody's just caught up to what he's doing. But I think there's a lot more at play there. There's a lot of complex entities happening. And I think that he's eager to show that it's not his coaching. It's just, you know, some other factors that kind of combine to maybe, you know, limit what he was trying to do. But I think he's going to try to, you know, have kind of a Pete Carroll-esque renaissance as far as his career and really reestablish himself here at UCLA.
Ben Bulch, LA Times, joining us. On Chip Kelly, you know, you talked to Mike Bellotti in your piece. You talked to some other people like Gary Croton, a former Ducks coordinator that Kelly spent good time with. When they were playing fast, everybody thought it was just about, hey, you're gonna play fast and you're gonna exhaust the defense. But there was much more to that, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, his big thing, as far as, you know, what I was kind of amazed by was just always having a response ready for whatever the defense does, or you know, he always has what I say is a counter to the counter. He's thought everything out multiple plays in advance as far as, well, if they do this, we're going to do this. You know, if they go here, we're going to go there. And he's always, you know, you always hear about the chess match. Well, he's a master tactician who's always thinking ahead and always really ahead of everyone else.
The Chip Kelly that is now at UCLA, he did not talk to you for this piece, right? I mean, that's a different Chip Kelly than we knew at Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously disappointed, but he did kind of start to limit access more his latter couple of years, correct?
Yeah, or am I wrong on that? After they got in some trouble with Willie Lyles, he really backed away. But he was a guy up until that point that he would call into this show kind of unsolicited sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I must say, though, he did let me sit in on a coaching clinic, and I used that for the lead of my final piece in the story, which I was grateful for. But yeah, you know, as far as the sit down to kind of explain his thinking and what he's all about, he's not really done that for anyone, I don't think, in quite some time.
All right. How good is this team going to be? They've got 8 seniors. Can they be any good?
Yeah, you know, I think the over-under on wins from Vegas is 5.5. I don't think Chip Kelly's going to lose, you know, 6 or 7 games in his first season. I mean, the UCLA guys were saying, you know, they lost as many games last season as Chip did in 4 years at Oregon. I don't see that happening again. I know they have a tough schedule. I know that, you know, there's some questions about this team's talent level, which I think are unfounded. But, you know, I think a 7 or an 8 win season is a pretty good possibility with this group.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because L.A., much different market than Eugene. I mean, it's a much different city than Eugene. And, you know, he's got LeBron there. You've got the Lakers there. There's other stuff going on. Does that benefit Chip Kelly? Or, Does that take some pressure off, or are people always going to be looking at UCLA and expecting them to rise up and have expectations?
Oh, I think he loves it. I think the fact that he loves it, he can walk down, you know, Rodeo Drive and basically go unnoticed among all the other luminaries in here in L.A. between, you know, the incredible entertainment community and all the pro athletes with all the teams we have here. I think he kind of enjoys that anonymity. It's not, you know, anonymity, complete anonymity, but just on a relative scale as opposed to, you know, a smaller college town where he's the guy and everybody gasps every time he walks down the street. So I think this is a good spot for Chip Kelly and one of the reasons he felt comfortable coming here.
USC is, you know, got that thing going. And I look at UCLA and, you know, I was there at Media Day and Bill Plachke, your colleague, said, it's been 20 years, Chip. It's been 20 years of failed expectations. Is there a real hope? Like, are people really believing that he is the guy that breaks through? Or is everybody kind of skeptical saying, hey, we've heard this before?
No, I think that, I hate to admit it, but I am lurking on UCLA message boards probably too much of my time. But people are really still pinching themselves that he's the coach here. And I think there's a sense that, you know, if Chip Kelly can't get it done with his pedigree and what he's done at Oregon, if he can't get it done at UCLA, nobody can. And maybe that's a little bit of an overstatement. But I think there is some validity to it that, you know, now they've got the coach in place. They've got tremendous facilities that rival anyone else's in the Pac-12 and maybe in the country with a new football building and brand new practice fields and all this, you know, Under Armour money floating around. So they've got kind of the perfect storm, and you combine that with obviously an amazing recruiting base in Southern California. So I think that the feeling is now, you know, within 2 to 3 years, they should be Rose Bowl level and contending for the college football playoff pretty much every year, you know. And if Chip uses that to catapult himself back to the NFL, you know, so be it, because I think if that's the case, then it will have obviously worked out well for both parties.
You think he'd want to go back to the NFL? I mean, do you have any sense of that?
You know, I don't have it directly from him, but from the people I talked to around him, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that he didn't like the way it ended and felt like, you know, he's better than that and wants to prove it. So I have to believe at least on some level that, you know, he's hoping that this is a springboard to get back to prove that, you know, he can win at the highest level, because that's what he wants to do, is to show that, you know, he's among the best in the game.
All right, here's the $23 million question. He's the coach at UCLA. With that is going to come demands from boosters and media. And I know at Oregon, one of the things that rankled some boosters is he didn't like driving down to Portland or driving up to Portland and doing the Duck Club luncheon and doing that stuff. He wanted to Skype in after the first couple years. He felt like he'd had enough success. He didn't need to make that drive. I know, because he used to call into the show on his drive back, and he'd get in trouble because he was calling in behind the back of the media sports information guy, just calling in. And he stopped doing that stuff in Portland, and I think it cost him some support. Can he get away in LA with not being the guy who's always at the luncheon or going to the booster functions?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talked to Rick Neuheisel, the former UCLA coach, about this a month or so ago, and he said that he thinks that, you know, the schmoozing responsibilities were absolutely laid on the table and made clear before Chip accepted this job. So I'm sure that they've, you know, come to some sort of agreement of what level of engagement he's going to have with these people who put so much money into the athletic department. And I've heard just anecdotally, though, that, you know, he's been to a couple of these functions and been very gracious and, you know, brought his new wife along. And, you know, and they had some teasing, you know, baby back and forth with some anecdotes. But, you know, so far, so good. I haven't heard any real grumbling so far. But, you know, I think, you know, once he gets it rolling here, he can pretty much do what he wants. So we may see kind of similar to Oregon, where, you know, as he goes along here and things start rolling, he can scale that back to his liking.
All right, great stuff, Ben. I will tweet out that 3-part series. We'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, John.
All right, UCLA Bruins beat reporter Ben Bulch from the LA Times. Next, we go to Corvallis, where the Beaver has got its buck teeth out. State releasing some news today. Benny the Beaver is coming back. Retro. This is not like me wearing my eighth grade middle school t-shirts. This is Benny the Beaver coming back. There are plans now. If you're an Oregon State fan, and people were really excited about this on social media today, Oregon State fans, about the return of the old Benny the Beaver. And I looked at it and I thought, you know what? That is a very simple logo. I liked it. Zach Lassiter is the deputy athletic director at Oregon State, and he joins us now. Some positive response out there for this Beaver logo.
Hey, John. Yeah, how are you doing? Yeah,
doing
people
well.
People love Benny, and they're excited to bring him back. The return theme is started with our football coach, and now it extends to Benny as well.
Why make the announcement now? I like it. Some people were like, "Hey, should have unveiled it as a surprise." But you don't get the punch you get in releasing it now, do you?
Yeah, I mean, today was just about us mentioning that he's back. We obviously, I think we debuted the helmet today, but there's still more to come. Obviously, we've centered around that October 20th game against Cal, but we still feel like we have a few things that we can share with folks they'll be excited about closer to the game.
The helmets, well, help me out with this. The Benny the Beaver helmet, will that be on the helmets all season, or is it just for that game, the Cal game?
The plan is to have it for that game. When we looked back, I think we found back in 1973 was the only season where this logo, Benny, appeared on the helmet. And so we thought certainly it's a great way to celebrate that. So it'll be for that game. But who knows? We believed through our research and talking to people that people would be excited about it. And so this is a chance for us to debut it, have some excitement around that game. It's also our Hall of Fame game, so we'll have former student athletes coming back and celebrating some of our past champions. So we thought it was a great way to kind of build some excitement around that game.
We're talking to Zach Lassiter. He is a deputy athletic director at Oregon State. The logo, Jonathan Smith's return, you've got all that positive momentum, and then last season you have 1-11. What are you selling to the fan base right now when you're talking about marketing season tickets and single game tickets? I noticed are also on sale.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about the return, I think the recognition and Coach Smith talks about it is, from 2000 to 2010, we were one of the three most winning programs in the league. And so bringing Jonathan back with some of his expertise and the staff that he brings from folks that have done turnarounds at other Pac-12 schools, I think really acknowledges the fact that we can win here and we'll win again. Obviously, the last few years haven't been what we want on the field, but I think you're seeing that across the board. You're seeing that with all the former student-athletes coming back. And Derek Anderson was there the first day of practice. We're seeing those folks come back and be re-engaged in numbers we haven't seen in a long, long time. You're seeing that with the return of this logo. I mean, all these things, let's celebrate what's great about Oregon State football, because there has been a lot of success in the recent history. And so take all those pieces together and then add some improvements to Research Stadium. Look at all the things that we can do and build on that success, because there's a lot of people that love Oregon State football. And there's no sport more popular in this country than football. And so we want to make sure it's a great chance for people to come back on campus, enjoy what's great about Oregon State, and then, certainly we're going to get back to that stage. It may not be game one, but I think Coach Smith talks about constant improvement and getting back to who we are as Oregon State, and I think we're well on our way to doing that.
There's a lot of mystery about what this team's going to look like. How are they going to play? Yesterday we were kind of making a case on the show about, what if they're a nice little surprise this season? What if, the Stanford game last year, they almost win that game. The Colorado game, they almost win that game. Would we be talking much different if it were a 3-win season? Would we be talking about 4 or 5 wins? On campus, is there a buzz about this team, or are the expectations sort of measured right now?
I think people are encouraged and cautiously optimistic would be the way I would describe it. I think certainly everyone believes that we have the right coach in place. We have the right staff in place. I think people also understand where we are as a program coming off the last 2 years. And so I think what you'll see eventually is a return to that. How quickly will dictate based on a couple plays every football game. I mean, John, as you know, every college football game turns on 3 to 5 plays each game. And if those go in your favor, the result can be very different. So the margin between winning and losing in college football is not nearly as large as people think. So if we make those plays and you start to see the belief and the belief that these guys believe in each other and believe in that they're going to win as opposed to hoping to win, I think over time you're going to see that confidence come back, the belief that we can be there. And I think people expect that here. And that's leadership of Coach Smith. You know, he's been part of winning programs his whole life as a player, as a coach, and everyone else around him is here to compete and to win games. That's ultimately why he's here.
Oregon State has made a push. You guys are making a push, really, to have this weekend be family fun day, autographs, a scrimmage, a movie on the new video board at Gill Coliseum. That is a cool event. You've also got, as you mentioned, Derek Anderson and Matt Moore and Bill Swancutt and Mike Haas, Gabe Miller and some others. You guys are really reaching into your past to really make this a return. How much of the old Oregon State will we see? On game day, will we see Beavers who haven't been there and haven't showed up for years?
Yeah, I think when you're looking at ideas, and we break it down into two areas, there's ideas and concepts that resonate with recruits, and then there's ideas that resonate with fans. And the great ones are ideas that resonate with both, right? Because we're not going to be successful unless we can make our program attractive to 17-year-olds. We also have to make sure that we create an environment that everybody who's a fan of Oregon State can come back. So I think what we're trying to find is where are those ideas that have with both? And obviously, you know, being out and listening and talking to people and encouraging them to come back, and you mentioned with the former players, is great. But we've also got to make sure that we're relevant in the recruiting area as well. And so I think it's been excited, DVDs back and from the football side, and they've been great partners about identifying what worked from 2000 to 2010. What were those game experiences or things that allowed us to have really a decade of success, but then also making sure it's relevant in 2018 as well. And so I think we found a really good combination of ideas that we'll bring back, but also some things that have worked and people are excited about. So yeah, it's about bringing everyone back into the program. You mentioned the Saturday Family Fun Day. It's a great day for it's a free event for fans to come out, check out the team. They're scrimmaging from 3 to 5. There'll be autographs after that, and then 7 o'clock, as you mentioned, we'll have the new video board in Gill, which is just incredible. You're not going to believe it until you see it. We're going to show Space Jam on there, a way to show folks that we're investing in facilities. And then we also were heading up to Bend as part of our Beaver State tour from August 21st to 23rd. We'll be up there, and on August 23rd, we'll have a scrimmage that'll be open to the public to get another chance people to get a look at this team, because there is a lot of excitement, a lot of intrigue about, you know, who's going to play and what kind of offense are we going to run. So we want to make sure we get opportunities for people to take a look at what we're doing so that they can decide whether we convinced them to get back on board. Because there's a lot of Beaver fans that have been watching Beaver football for the last few years. We haven't given them a good enough reason to come back to Reser. And it's our job to do that, and I think we're well on our way.
Zach Lassiter with us, Oregon State's deputy athletic director. It's interesting because I have a panel of millennials that I keep around the show just to do sort of focus group work with. I showed them the helmets, and they said, fire! And that was it. I closed the door. They love the helmets. So kids are loving the retro helmets. What's that about?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I talk about, John. I mean, those ideas that resonate with recruits and resonate with fans. Like, we've got to have ideas that resonate with 17-year-olds and 70-year-olds. And so if we're not actively listening to what those people enjoy, then we're not doing our part. And that's really that partnership between the football program and us on the administrative side of trying to find where those ideas align. And you're seeing that with the retro Benny helmet. You're seeing that with some of our best college town, the Pac-12 campaigns. All these ideas, I think, ultimately are targeted at recruits, but also, I think, bring out affinity and excitement from a fan base. And sometimes it's really easy to come up with one and both. But our ability, I think, to unite everyone and get people excited about it, because if we don't have not just recruits, but our students in the seats, because really college football, the excitement and the energy of the stadium starts with the student section. And if they don't feel engaged and part of what's going on, then it's really hard to overcome that. And so it's really important for us to make sure that, that young people that love to yell and scream and have a great time at games, that we have them coming back, because that'll be how we get Rooster rocking again.
All right. When you go to bring Benny the Beaver, the retro logo, back for the helmets, is that a big, long discussion, or is it kind of like the response on Twitter right now? I just tweeted a photo of the helmet, and people are going, I love this helmet. It's on fire. I have to have this. Is that a big, long discussion, or is it, what do you guys think of this? Done. That's a good idea. Like, how big is that group when you're making that decision?
Yeah, it starts small and gets bigger. I mean, this idea has been in the works for quite a while, close to a year. And it starts with the recognition that we think we're on to something and we're going to have success. Then it turns into, you know, what partners do we need to make this successful? And we were fortunate enough to sit down with Nike a while back and pitch this idea, and they were on board and thought it was great. And so, you know, how do we utilize those assets? And then Coach Smith comes on board, and we sit down and we talk about the idea, and he was excited about it, very encouraged about, hey, I love the way we're going with that. We're on board. So once we get those real key stakeholders and folks that have the ability to make it successful, then you start working on more tactics. And so some of the fun stuff, I think one of the neater visual pieces that we did is the Retro Benny log. This gentleman, I want to make sure to give him credit, Kevin Strosslin. He works for Oregon 3D Art and Chainsaw Sculpting. And we had this idea of debuting the logo, and we commissioned him to do the Retro Benny in a log. I mean, this thing weighs 500 pounds, and he was able to do a fun sculpture of it. We actually have it in the Beaver store here on campus. And that's what you saw in our video release as a way to kind of tease everyone on what we're doing. So certain pieces of the campaign come together later on, but ultimately you gotta start small, and then as you get closer and closer, get as many people on board to make sure that when you make that launch and people have excitement around it, that you can utilize it. And it's been fun to watch the reaction from, like you said, social media. Yeah, it's about fans, alums, but you know, we have a few of our student athletes on social being excited about it as well. And so I think, as we believe that when we put this back out to talk about it, this would be something that people would be excited about. And that's what you want leading into a football season. You want people excited. You want people talking about Oregon State and what to look forward to this fall. And as we get closer to football season, I think every day you have something to talk about leads people into making a decision about whether they're going to get back and reengage with football, which you want them to, because we got a football game here at home in less than a month, and we want to give people as many reasons as we can to come and cheer on the Bees at Rooster Stadium.
All right. Have you had a look at this team? I mean, and people are going to get to see them scrimmage on Saturday, but have you seen what they look like? Have you stopped by a practice? Can you give us any kind of insight that the media does not yet have?
I certainly don't pretend to be a football coach. If we're relying on my insight for where we're going to go, then we've hired the wrong person. But what I look at and enjoy in practice is how coaches coach, and do they have a plan? Do they utilize every minute? Is there a method to what they're doing? And been really impressed at the energy level and the organization that a first-year head coach has been able to bring. And what that tells me is that he's hired a staff that understand what it's like to compete at this level, and the ability to get our young players to be able to believe in that, I think it's only a matter of time. So I'm excited about it. I'm as curious about who's going to play as anyone else. But I think, as Coach has mentioned too, you know, we'll make those decisions when we need to. And creating a competitive environment and giving people a chance to compete for positions is a great opportunity. That's what everybody who comes to play any sport here wants. So we'll see. I'm excited about what I've seen, but at the same time, I'm going to rely on Coach Smith to know where we need to be to get ready to play at Ohio State to start the season.
Zach Lassiter, thank you. Good stuff.
Thanks, John. Take care. Have a great weekend. Go Beavs.
There's the Deputy Athletic Director at Oregon State, Zach Lassiter. What do you think of the new helmets? What do you think of what Oregon State is selling to you? 503-417-7575.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but If you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.